When you've been a witness to atrocities in your own backyard, your own birthplace, your own community, I wonder if it's harder then to turn a blind eye to injustice in other communities elsewhere, whether you become sensitised to the human rights issues with a very particular eye. And I've got a man with a very particular eye as my guest now. He's Sri Lankan-born photographer Jagat Derasekara, and much of Jagat's work hopes to engage us with, well, actually the more intimate scenes that underlie human rights stories. It's taken him from Sri Lanka to our own desert lands. His latest project is a stunning visual documentation of people in the Makati community in the Northern Territory, a region of interest because it's being considered as a potential nuclear waste site. His show is called Manuwanku, Under a Nuclear Cloud, for which he received an Amnesty International Human Rights Fund grant award. And he joins me now. Welcome, Jagat.
Thank you.
You've been described by some as a human rights photographer, and I wonder what that means.
I think it goes back to my history as well, because I started photography in documenting human rights violations in Sri Lanka in late 1980s and early 90s. It is not only photography, but whole documentation of violations and making the world aware of it. Mm. So I was part of an organization called Students for Human Rights. So I was involved in activities of human rights.
Mm. And that really sensitized you
Yes.
to this, both as a photographer but also at the time as an activist.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you seem to, with your photography and certainly some of the photos that I've looked at from Sri Lanka, that you've taken in Sri Lanka, you know, one of a series of photos takes us into people's bedrooms and all the little sort of detail of their lives. It's disarmingly intimate. Jagat, how do these images speak to you, for you, to human rights issues?
Well, I do photograph various things, not only very intense human rights violations or marginalized. Yes, true, I tend to gravitate towards the topics such as marginalized, dispossessed and discriminated and all that. But at the same time, I do photograph social change and social themes as well. Mm-hmm. Whatever I do for, no matter what I photograph, always there's a human being behind that photograph. So bedroom series is something like that. I photographed over a period of, to my recollection, it is over a period of 1.5 years or 2 years. The age between 13 and 23. I travel length and breadth of the country photographing these bedrooms.
Mm. Yeah, there's something about that, capturing people's intimate lives, that really conveys a great humanity. Since you've come to and settled in Australia, you've been really drawn to desert communities and Aboriginal communities in Central Australia. You've been into those communities a few times. Tell us the story of the Makati community and what drew you particularly to photograph them.
Makati community dragged me there, especially because I have a special sort of a interest in Aboriginal communities and people's issues. Mm. And I first went to Northern Territory in early 2010 when to Ambladavaj, where that particular community walked off from their prescribed area against Northern Territory intervention. So
you captured that protest?
Not for a long time. Some volunteers went to support them build a house there, so kind of a coordinating center. So I went there to photograph that with a film crew. So that was the beginning. There I met good friends, and one was Natalie Worsley, who is working for Beyond Nuclear Initiative. So that was the beginning for me to go to Makati community.
So what's happening at Makati community? Remind us.
Well,
it's touted as a possible nuclear waste
site. That's right. So I saw it as a very, very sensitive and intense human rights issue, because this Aboriginal community is never say yes to it, and they don't like it. So then I automatically gravitated to that particular community and the subject. So then I went there.
So again, you've captured very intimate images of people in their rooms, people in their desert country. And, you know, looking at the images, the desert pics are kind of wide and vast, and that wonderful rich red sand with those sort of great grasses, sort of shots of green spiking up out of the red desert. So people, community members look really healthy in that landscape, but when you bring them back and you capture their images inside their rooms and inside their shelters, some viewers might see it as squalor. Did you see it like that?
Well, it's the whole way of living in Aboriginal communities in that particular land or whole of Northern Territory, so to speak. It's a kind of a juxtaposition when they live, because people live mostly in town camps, and at the same time, their desire to be engaged in their own traditional way of life is also there. So it goes parallelly. So the two ways of life.
Mm. There's a real tension there.
Exactly.
In the desert, you see the old culture.
Yes.
In the shelters, you know, a bit grotty, all
yes.
that.
Exactly.
You see a new collision.
Yes, it's a semi-urban, and at the same time, those houses are overcrowded and run down and all those things. But at the same time, whenever they get a chance to go to the bush and to perform their cultural activities, they always do that, and they are willing to do that, they desire to do that.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about your own background, because you left Sri Lanka, didn't you, as a political refugee to France?
Yeah, I, with my activities, human rights documentation and my involvement with human rights activities, so led me into detention and all that. So
you smile now. I bet you weren't smiling then. Very tough transition.
Yeah, it was. Mm. It was. And then that situation forced me to leave Sri Lanka, and I was granted political asylum in France. And I lived there for years, and then again went back to Sri Lanka and lived there till 2008.
Still capturing those images that were uncomfortable for people.
Yes, of course, yes.
when you head to the Red Desert, what do they make of your history? What do they make of the Makati community members? What do they make of your own history?
Oh, the Makati community takes, and this particular project takes a huge chunk in my life, in my photographic history. It's as Sandy Edwards, my curator, put it, it's an enormous achievement of any photographer. So I'm humbly proud about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge, huge project for me.
It's been a process, though, of finding your photographic voice again here in Australia, hasn't it? Because in another series of photographs, which you've called The Clothesline Diary, this is very close to the time that you came to Australia, wasn't it? And it's literally a series of photographs of your clothesline. But that was a very difficult time for you, wasn't it?
Yes, it's usually when you go to a country, a new country, settling in period is a very difficult time for anyone. And it was the same with us as well, because we have three children, and my wife is working full time. So, well, I didn't have much time to go out and do photography. But I always do take photographs all the time, day in, day out, at home, I mean, as a habit.
Yes.
But clothesline, I started photographing. I still do photography.
Do you? What a funny little, it's a curious project, that one. I love it.
Yes.
Just to finally, taking us back to Makati, How do you hope your images of their daily lives, very intimate images, simple images in some respect, how do you hope it might bring or highlight the issue of their concerns about the nuclear waste disposal plans or the potential of them?
The main idea behind my narrative, photographic narrative, was to say it is not middle of nowhere. So they engage themselves in cultural activities in relation to their land quite strongly. So their spirit and their connection to the land was my message.
Because the assumption is that that is not there, that it is the middle of nowhere, and so
it is someone else's home always.
Dump yes. nuclear waste there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And how do they respond to the photos?
They quite like it. They quite like it. And in fact, we use some of their codes in a Facebook page and all that. So they quite like it. And they're waiting the exhibition to come to their town, Tennant Creek.
Tour it.
It is on tour after Customs House. After Head On Festival, it will go to La Trobe and then in Melbourne and Darwin and then Alice Springs.
That's great to know because, of course, we're going out nationally across Australia. At the moment, Jagat, his exhibition is at Custom House in Sydney. It's the Manawanku Under a Nuclear Cloud exhibition. Get along if you're in that part of the world. And Jagat, thanks so much for coming into Life Matters.
Thank you so very much.
We'll pop a link on our website to your website. Books and Arts Daily, Michael Cathcart, what have you got on?
Hi, Tash. We've got two authors who find humour in misfortune. There's Kathy Lett, who's written The Boy Who Fell to Earth, all about a boy with Asperger's, and Tony Jordan, who's written Addition, which is all about a character who has obsessive compulsive disorder, just can't stop counting.
Aye, good one. Enjoy the show.
Okay.
Look, tomorrow we've got a show. Our talk back is about bullying. We're interested. Were you a former bully? Have you sort of cringed and thought back on your own behaviour? Perhaps you were the recipient of being of a bully. You were bullied yourself. We're looking at the whole lifelong trajectory of bullying, kind of in response to the Mitt Romney story. So join us then and give us your calls.